The world of construction is transforming before our eyes. How we design, plan, quantify, and build is changing day to day. But it's never been so easy to connect, share, and bring people together. Our industry is reshaping. So how do we develop relationships? How do we overcome our fears? How do we generate business? And how do we ultimately become the best version of ourselves?
This is Measured. I'm McDonaghy, and my guest today is...
Okay, so today on Measured, we are joined by Mikael Heininen. Mikael is a qualified quantity surveyor and co-founder of Collabaloop, a construction technology startup with a mission to incrementally transform the culture within the construction industry. Mikael is also the chief enabler of the Build Better Network and someone with experience working for consultancies, main contractors, and large mining organizations. So it's a real pleasure to have Mikael on the show today, and I'm really excited to have you here, mate. So thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. Awesome to be here, and I love just talking about how we can improve the industry.
Awesome. So would you introduce yourself to the people out there, Mikael, who maybe don't know what it is that you're doing or what it is that you're up to at the moment?
I think you probably touched on it quite well. But ultimately, I'm starting a startup, and its mission is to basically try and change the culture within industry and make a positive impact on that industry, which currently at the moment there's a lot of things that people say are wrong with it, and they're all sort of, I guess, symptoms of a bigger issue, which is the current culture within the industry.
Awesome. So that we'll get into that, you know, very shortly. But I mean, let's take us back then. So you studied quantity surveying, is that right? What was it? What made you want to be a QS?
Yeah, interesting story. So initially, I had sort of sought out to be an architect initially, but I didn't actually get the grades that I needed to do architecture. And through a family friend, they sort of put me on the wagon towards being a QS, and they said, yep, it's a good career, and you can actually make some reasonable money with it. So that's how I sort of got into to studying quantity surveying. And I guess to take a couple of steps back in terms of why I sort of wanted to still stay within the construction industry, I had a passion from an early age. My dad was a landscaper, so I'd sort of go and work with him on school holidays and just help labor and do things around construction sites. So I got the bug of just seeing things grow from nothing into something that's actually finished. So just like that transformation process.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, there was one time I wanted to be an architect as well. I've said it on the show many times. I reckon it's one of those things that anytime I mentioned I want to be an architect, people should take a shot. Because you're at least going to be drinking once or twice during every episode. I mean, obviously starting off your career in quantity surveying, and then you'd worked in, you know, like the consultancy side of things and in the contractor side of things, you know, what was those initial sort of years like for you?
Yeah, so I guess I was brought up on the work, that work hard and play hard. That was sort of what happened in the early days when I was started out as a QS. And so we'd sort of be doing bills of quantities until midnight quite often. I guess, I got to a point where I was working as a QS and felt that, you know, you're doing all of these activities and making a benefit to owners, but you're not making that benefit to your own company that you're working for. That's, I guess, the initial why I made the move to go to a contractor in the first place, because then you're working for someone that actually, benefits in the business that you're actually working within.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, it's funny because I know quite a lot of QSs, and they mention that they work a lot long hours, you know, like, and I've been watching the TV show Billions recently, and you see everybody's in the office until like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, but they're probably earning like a massive package, you know, they're on like stock traders and all, so you can imagine what sort of money they're on. But I mean, it's a different world when you're starting off in your career, and you're I guess, as a QS, you're not even earning that much, you know, it must be quite challenging.
Yeah, and I think ultimately it was about just putting yourself out there and trying to prove yourself at an early age. And I know things have changed now when you look at what the, I guess, general perception in society is, and you think back and well, it's probably not the right way to do it. And rightly so. So, you know, if I was in the same situation, I necessarily wouldn't put my team through that, because ultimately, yeah, it's just not healthy in the long term.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, doing anything until, you know, starting off at 7 in the morning and working right through to 12 o'clock at night is not healthy at all, no matter what it is, you know, so.
Yeah, and you're not effective. Anything beyond the sort of 8 hours, you start sort of going downhill, don't you? So
yeah. So what's your story then, Mikhail? Did you, you know, are you originally from Brisbane, or like what's your background?
Yeah, so my parents are immigrants, and mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was born in Sydney but moved up to Brisbane when I was about 2.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Queenslander for most of my life. Yep. But yeah, most of my extended relatives are all in Sweden and Finland, so I haven't necessarily had an opportunity the last couple of years to go and see them, but yeah, through, I guess, after high school, I spent a few years over there just sort of immersing myself in a slightly different culture and getting to know what my background was all about.
So you've got those Viking genes then?
Yeah. So I don't know if you might see in the background, I've got a Viking.
Oh, true. Oh my, yeah. God. No, that's class. I didn't even notice that. That's awesome. For the people that are listening, there's a Viking helmet in the background, which is classic.
It was given to me by one of my project directors on a project I worked on, and yeah, it was just about how I approached in terms of my contract management, which mm-hmm. I guess we'll get into a little bit later, but I guess I've sort of evolved since then. It's a good reminder about, you know, not having to be so adversarial.
Yeah. So let's talk about what you're up to then at the moment. So, I mean, you've obviously worked for a long time in the mining resources industry, which is, I think, really interesting, isn't it? Bechtel, it's mining, isn't it? Or am I wrong?
No, they do all construction. So yeah, the particular business unit that I worked in was the mining metals. So our major clients were Rio Tinto, BHP. So we were working on new mines, new port developments, that sort of stuff for them. But yeah, within Bechtel there was infrastructure, oil and gas, and sort of a government type entity as well. So they covered across all sorts of infrastructure projects. Anything that was sort of 1 or 2 billion plus, that they would sort of have a look at.
Awesome. I mean, so obviously you've went from this sort of position within a, you know, well-structured business, you know, well-known globally, and you've left that all behind, and you're now starting something up by yourself. You know, talk me through that. What's got you to this point?
Yeah, I guess the driver for me is aligning with my purpose, and it took me a while to I guess reconcile with that. But at a certain point in time, I sort of got to realize that for me, my purpose and my priorities were my family.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the projects available to build from Brisbane with Bechtel were sort of starting to be very limited. Yeah, so I had to sort of make a call on what I wanted to do. So then coincidentally, and that was part of the reason I went off and self-funded an MBA, just to try and get outside that construction bubble that I was sort of within. And the initial purpose there was really to sort of, yeah, immerse myself outside of the construction bubble, but from a contract management perspective,
mm-hmm.
and see how other industries maybe approach things. And I got to realize through that whole journey, there was a bit of self-development from me, but also there's all of the leadership aspects, and got to really better understand from a systems thinking perspective that the issues that from the construction industry that I had been involved in 20 plus years weren't necessarily solved or solely reliant on the contract models. And it was more of a human aspect that needed to change, and that, and culture is all about the behaviors of individuals within the system to, mm-hmm. and that ultimately it's the emergent output of how everyone behaves is what your system ends up being, or from a sort of culture perspective, that's what it ends up being.
And in terms of with regards to the MBA, then, I mean, you mentioned that it was self-funded. Like, that must have been fairly, fairly scary, because, you know, you're obviously investing a lot of money in something that you don't know what you're going to get from it. You know, yeah. I know some people have done MBAs and say they've got nothing from it. And I know people have done MBAs and say that it's completely changed their thinking in every way. Yeah. You know, like what was that like for you then, you know, having to self-fund? It was not fairly scary, because I know a lot of people out there would maybe like to do something, but maybe just don't have the, aren't sure what they're going to achieve.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I had an attitude that I was going to go in there and try and just suck everything as much as I could out of it. And even there was subjects on, you know, business law and that sort of stuff, which I had obviously in contract management quite a high exposure to. Definitely not a lawyer, but maybe a bush lawyer. But I had a reasonable confident in what I could learn there. But I sort of went into it going, well, maybe there's something else that I can learn here that I missed or whatever. And yeah, so I went into every sort of module going, well, what can I get out of this? And think about the long-term aspect in terms of how can I grow from that? Yeah, mm-hmm. So that was, I guess, the approach that I took. And luckily for me, my wife supported me doing it. And, you know, from a, you know, financial perspective, that we managed to try and deal with that. And also from a being away from the helping chores and all that sort of stuff and the three kids and time away to do assignments. Yeah, she was supportive of that as well. So yeah, we were able to manage that together.
No, that's great. And I mean, so did you go for a bit of a journey then on the MBA, or was it a bit of like, was there a lot of self-reflection?
Yeah. They certainly the UT one that I did, it was structured in such a way that you sort of look at who you are and what you do and why you're doing it, and ultimately questioning why you do things a certain way. So they get you do a 360 up front, and then you sort of then go, okay, well, that's my current leadership style and perspectives of what other people think of me. And you sort of go, well, is that what I want to be, and how do I potentially change that? And to do that, yeah, you need to do that self-reflection and see how does that align with where you want to go. And look at what are those potential big assumptions that you've had in your life that cause you to, I guess, do things a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that process as well, you get to be more self-aware, which is one of the, I think, things going forward which people need to do if they want to basically push forward in this new sort of normal.
Yeah. I think COVID's brought up a lot of question marks with regards to who we are as individuals. You know, even for me, I've always thought I was fairly self-aware, you know, and know what my strengths and weaknesses are, but going through lockdowns I realized that I don't know myself that well at all, you know. And I started working with like an ex sort of CEO within the recruitment industry, and he got me to go through, it was like a, not a personality test, but it was something similar. I think it's called a HBDI or something like that. Yeah. I thought my, you know, going through lockdowns, I was like, well, if I go out on a run this morning, I'll come back and I'll feel better, you know. And, you know, you feel better, but I only felt better for a short while. It was kind of like, kind of like that crack hit, you know. But he actually brought it out to me, is that you need to be engaging in more meaningful conversations with people. That's where you get your fulfillment from.
Yeah.
And, you know, being aware of that, you can actually begin to go, well, if I'm in lockdown or something similar, if I'm scheduling conversations with people, if it's friends or work colleagues or, you know, clients, and you're having meaningful conversations, I take something from that more than, you know, maybe going on a run and feeling good for 15, 20 minutes after, you know. Yeah. So
we're all social animals, right? So that's where we, you know, I mean, introverts and extroverts obviously have different ways of dealing with that. But the yeah, ultimately we need to have some sort of social connection, and mm-hmm. that feeds into, I guess, who we are and those sort of aspects. Yeah, it's definitely important.
So with your startup, can you tell me more about that then? You know, what's Collabaloop about, and what's the vision?
Yep. Yeah, so from a broad perspective, Collabaloop, we're looking at how we can provide tools and solutions to really, I guess, kick that culture change along. So the other thing that you mentioned at the start, so I sort of started the Build Better Network, which is essentially just an open education forum for me to, and for others who want to join in, to provide some alternative perspectives to the status quo. And it's just more of a thought piece type thing. And yeah, figured that, you know, education's good, but sometimes you need to have a bit more meaningful action. So yeah, we're just looking at how we can provide different sort of solutions to just kickstart that along. And our initial focus is on apprentices and other sort of, I guess, vulnerable cohorts within the industry, such as females and women on tools specifically, and how we can better support them through a technology platform. So getting them to provide some input and some feedback to then us then pull out some insights and give that to a support person or a mentor to then have meaningful conversations with them to keep them engaged and keep them within the industry.
So where do you see things at the moment in terms of a culture perspective in the construction industry? You know, where, you know, how do we compare to other industries out there?
Well, it's very adversarial. Without saying the word toxic, it's very adversarial. So it's a very dog-eat-dog sort of environment. People don't necessarily think beyond their own little bubble. So whether or not that's their team or their company or their project, that's not to say that there aren't good projects and good people and good companies out there. There definitely are. From an overall perspective, if you look at what the symptoms are, and they are, you know, low profitability, high rates of insolvency, high rates of particularly male suicide, low rates of innovation, low rates of productivity, low mm-hmm. rates of diversity. You know, all of these measures, they all sort of tell the same sort of picture, that there's something not right.
Mm.
So yeah, again, if I use systems thinking perspective, they're all interrelated. They're not necessarily a one-off thing that you can sort of shoot that silver bullet and fix.
Yeah.
You need to look at it more holistically and how they interrelate and how they interconnect.
Yeah, I think you touched on something there with regards to innovation. You know, innovation in the construction industry seems like it doesn't exist to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I know that there are, you know, you see new apps that are coming out for project management tools, you know, but, you know, everyone's been talking about BIM integration and that for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be, when you look at other industries, like, you know, you see what they're doing in the, you know, what Tesla's doing, you know, for electric cars, or even in, you know, what we do with smartphones and the technology industry. It seems so like Neanderthalish, if that's a word, you know. It seems so backdated. No, like, you know, you tender for a project the same way, you win a project the same way, you deliver the project the same way. You know, like, why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, there's probably a couple of reasons. I mean, one is that because the industry is always at the red line, they're always at the limit, so they don't really have time to think, okay, well, let's do it differently, or, you know, let's take this chance on X, Y, and Z, or let's invest this money on innovation, because normally innovation takes time to take hold. You have, it's normally a long term investment, and then I guess the other one is because of the fragmented nature of the industry. Because you've got so many, you look at how the construction industry is built up, and it's generally very highly weighted towards the SMEs. And if you've got so many different people that you're trying to get on board, it's very hard. And I guess probably a third one is, and it sort of ties into those as well, is when you've got a culture that they don't trust each other. It makes it very hard then to collaborate. So then ultimately, a lot of these innovations do require sort of an element of collaboration between differing, whether or not it's companies or projects or whatever. When you don't have that high level of trust, then basically collaboration's non-existent.
Yeah, it's so true. So obviously, I assume collaboration is a big part of what you want to achieve with Collabaloop. You know, it seems to be part of the name. So yeah. I'm taking a punt and thinking maybe there's something there.
Well, yeah, ultimately it comes down to conversations and people being open and upfront and, yeah, having the conversation early about different things. So if it's two project managers talking to each other who generally are opposite sides of the fence, can they have a conversation and talk about, you know, what am I doing to make you successful and vice versa, as opposed mm-hmm. to what am I doing to protect my own interests and make sure that I don't lose, as opposed to we don't win together.
Mm. Yeah. So what's the reason that you're focusing on the apprentices?
Yeah, so we found, I guess, when you start scratching the surface, that, you know, 50% of them almost don't finish what they start. And I mean, that's an industry average for trade apprentices. So yeah, acknowledge that some parts of the industry are a lot higher, but then some parts are a lot lower. So electricians and plumbers, I believe, are higher than that. But ultimately they all drop out. So when we start talking about skill shortages and, you know, backing up the people that are going to be retiring from the industry with the, you know, there's a flood of baby boomers that are not going to be there for much longer, how do you fill that gap? And so if you're spending all this money for apprentices but you're only getting 50% out of it, you know, it just seems like it's a big waste of money. But also you look at the impacts and then on the broader society of what happens with that, and then you link in the whole mental health, you know, that young apprentices or young people, young males within the construction industry are two times higher to commit suicide than the same age group, the same cohort in another industry. It's pretty crazy. So yeah, like if we want to make a difference, then yeah, I think part of the solution is to help the new generation coming through, because ultimately it's probably going to be a generational change.
Mm.
So how do you incentivize or keep them engaged and wanting to be within the industry? Because it's, I mean, for all its warts, I find the industry fascinating and I love it. So.
Yeah, well, it's great to see someone's taking the mantle and actually trying to change something, you know. And you do see there's a lot of, you know, obviously talk around, you know, with regards to female participation in construction, you know, yeah. within, you know, Indigenous engagement and that sort of thing. But, you know, the apprentices is something that you maybe don't hear about just as much. You know, I didn't know that statistic as an example, that 50% of apprentices don't actually complete their apprenticeship. So I mean, what sort of strategies or techniques, you know, do you suggest that the companies look at promoting within those specific positions?
Yeah, well, again, when you look at why they are dropping out, and the statistics sort of tell a picture that it's heavily weighted towards the workplace and the environment in which they work in. So that could be things that are outside the control of the employer. So whether or not it's rates of pay and that sort of stuff, because a lot of that's, you know, mandated by awards and the like.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still an element of managing those expectations. And if you've got a healthy workplace culture where people want to turn up, then they don't necessarily think about some of those other aspects. So it's providing, yeah, managing those expectations. It's providing additional support. So again, bringing in, you touched on female participation, and I think that's a very similar aspect, right? Where there's a recent RMIT study into female in the construction industry, and found that 60% of females didn't feel supported when they had a challenge within the industry. So whether or not it's some sort of harassment or that sort of stuff. So again, it's having that support aspect, feeling that, you know, that they actually feel they belong within the industry, because again, they might be very isolated because they're a sort of a smaller cohort.
Yep. I mean, I think I had a recently interviewed a guest, and they had that exact situation where they had an issue with a specific matter within the workplace, and they went to HR, and you know, they were essentially didn't receive any support, you know. But you know, you'll get those people out there, you know, the older generation will say, oh well, back in my day, you know, anyone, it was hard on us too. You know, the stuff that I had to go through as an apprentice was, you know, obscene. You know, it's just the younger generation, they're weak minded, blah blah blah. You know, like what would be your sort of response to that?
So what?
But
the response would be, so what? Like just because someone's been through, you know, heartache, does it mean that everyone has to go through that same heartache? I mean, mm-hmm. is that all encompassing that, you know, to be an apprentice, you need to actually understand, yeah, the pains of X, Y, and Z, because I mean, things have changed since then as well. Like there's different techniques and there's all sorts of things, right? And the world's changed as well. So it might be a valid comment from them, but ultimately, yeah, like it comes down to the individual people who are in the industry at the moment that you need to, mm-hmm. and it's from their perspective, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, you have to deal with individuals and their own individual perspectives. From that point there that I just made, when you talk about bullying, for example, which is pretty highly prevalent still within the industry, and there's strong correlation with bullying and poor mental health and that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
Bullying in itself is, again, in the eye of the beholder, right? So just because you do a joke or something and you think it was funny, it might be funny. It might have worked with the first 10 apprentices that you got or whatever, or it might have worked in your day. But again, the person that's actually receiving it, they're the one that they're seeing it as bullying. So they need to be considered in that aspect.
No, I agree. And I think what the way I look at things as well is that construction's going to find it harder and harder to find talent, you know, and especially at that trade level. You know, if you're, you know, between 16 and maybe 20, you will, you know, the young people will have more and more opportunities in different sectors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, those people, you know, they could get an access to an internship at a technology company, or, you know, you're seeing what's going on. I seen something the other day of like a 9-year-old, or was it 10-year-old or something like that? He made £250,000 through collecting NFTs. So, I mean, there's over the next few decades, construction is going to be at war with every other industry. Exactly. To get people. Yep. So if you have 50% of those young people are dropping out, where are they going to?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yep.
So it doesn't matter. The way I look at it is, if you have to have your culture right and your processes right to look after those people, or otherwise, what's the point? What are you trying to achieve?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. No, that's 100% true. Yeah. So what is construction's competitive advantage, right, compared mm-hmm. to the other industries? And at the moment, from an outsider looking in that maybe hasn't had that exposure, they're probably sitting there going, I'm not going to try that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's one of the major reasons why, you know, you need to think about how you come across in terms of your culture. And I think from an individual business perspective, they need to consider how can they be an employer of choice,
mm-hmm.
and having a healthy workplace culture where people feel like they want to, you know, turn up every day and give their best, that goes a long way in terms of doing that.
No, I agree. And I think, construction has so much going for it. You know, I mean, I grew up in a sort of construction family. My father's a plumber, you know, all my uncles and, you know, cousins and stuff all worked in construction. And for me, you know, I ended up working construction is because where I felt comfortable.
Yeah.
But we want to keep attracting people to the industry. We want to attract young people. We want to attract females. We want to attract, you know, ethnic groups. And there's so much that I see. You know, I don't like saying that the construction industry is racist, but I see it nearly every day. You know, candidates not being accepted into a job because their name is foreign, isn't a Western name, and you know, you meet this person and they'll talk to you in an Australian accent. You know, so I mean, it's pretty. There's so many things that we can change, but I think working at that, you know, approaching that apprentice level, you know, will have so many lasting impacts. Yeah. You know,
I was just going to say, just so on that, I guess, diversity aspect there. Yeah, like there's strong evidence to suggest that, you know, having diverse workforces actually benefits businesses. But I mean, even if you look at my last employer, we were very diverse because we had always, essentially as a global company, we'd have people then coming in from all different parts on projects and generally having sort of that Bechtel experience, right? Because they knew the systems and all that sort of stuff and worked on a number of really successful projects, and the ones that did succeed were the ones where they embraced that diversity, and they had the two best ones that I worked on had female leadership on the project heads, and they were the best ones to work for because you felt like you could speak openly, tell it how it was, and just get on with it and build it, and everyone had sort of value everyone's opinions and respect each other.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, it's important that we have a diverse business. And I think one of the things about COVID and on a positive side is that because we've had, you know, lockdowns and border restrictions, that companies are nearly being forced to an extent to have an open mind. And whether that's from people with overseas experience or, you know, someone coming in maybe who could be at retirement age, but they still want the work, you know, there's more companies are actually going, well, we need to have an open mind, you know? So, I mean, what is the vision then with Collabaloop? Like, where is it that you want to go with the business?
Yeah, well, we see that obviously the first step's helping apprentices and female in trades to basically feel like they want to stay in the industry. But we see more broadly an opportunity to measure culture within projects. And I guess just what I touched on before in terms of understanding what successful projects are and measuring those critical aspects of projects to go, well, what's working, what's not working, and what are the key drivers? So whether or not it's psychological safety, all those sort of aspects in there, and then potentially using it as a, when you look from a systems thinking point of view, having a more systematic risk review process as opposed to putting things on, you know, the linear risk registers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's really good to see someone actually taking charge and doing something. And then one thing I'd noticed about what you said there is that you're looking potentially to measure culture. So that's obviously the quantity of air coming out in you, Mikhail. Like, do you think that's something that can be achieved?
Well, we'll try. and I think our approach is that we're always going to be looking at how we can improve. So we've got a very sort of continual improvement mindset, a very growth mindset. And we're open to tweaking things and things that don't work, casting them away, I guess. And that's a very entrepreneurial mindset that we're taking on. But we want to make sure that we continue having that sort of mindset as we grow.
Mm. I mean, it's important that we all continue to obviously be reflective and look at ourselves, be self-aware, and seeing what we can do to improve. I mean, if there's anyone out there that wants to connect in with you, Mikhail, if there's any companies out there that are interested in having a conversation, or likewise, any stakeholders just within the construction industry, what's the best way to get in contact?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so they can probably find me on LinkedIn. Otherwise, if you go to the Collaborate website, there should be some contact details there as well.
Awesome. Okay. Well, it was really good to have you on the show today, Mikhail, and thank you for coming on, sharing your story.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to Measured with me, Mick Donaghy. Our goal with this podcast is to create a community of construction professionals from a variety of backgrounds and experiences to develop, learn, and grow together. As a business, our aim with Franklin Smith is to become the most respected pre-construction and quantity surveying recruitment agency in Australia within the next 5 years. Thereafter, our goal is to build a 100-year company that outlives us as owners, but lives on in the careers and legacy projects we recruit for. Listening to this podcast is being a small part of that journey, and we are forever thankful for your time. If you'd like to connect further with our ever-growing community, check out the Measured Facebook and LinkedIn pages. Thanks for listening to Measured. Catch you next time.